Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 4th of November. The first hour of our program today, we'll be talking about cable news and other kinds of news as well. Partisan fragmentation on cable news, has it grown significantly? Should the president take on Fox News? Do we tend to watch cable stations that reinforce what our opinions are? Or do we watch all cable channels regardless of the political bent of any of those stations? Joining us the first hour of our program today is Mark Jerkowitz. He's Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He has spent about 20 years covering the news media. He was press critic and author of the Boston Phoenix Don't Quote Me column for a number of years. He also spent 10 years at the Boston Globe. He teaches courses on media ethics at Northeastern University and Tufts University and has been a commentator on media-related issues on many cable media outlets. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. The number is 800-486-8655. The email address, you're so welcome to use that, is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Mark. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So let me ask this general question at the beginning. Is the partisan fragmentation on cable news growing significantly?
I think that, you know, basically we saw the equation change pretty dramatically in 2008. And during the election year. And, you know, again, the thing we should say first and foremost is obviously there is a difference in cable news by day part. You know, during the day, cable news obviously tends to be newsier. They tend to be more focused on breaking news. They tend to deliver the reporting in a more traditional way. At night, on the primetime programming on cable news, which is, I think, what most people frankly think of these days when they think of cable news, you have essentially a debate format that usually takes the one or two big issues of the day, perhaps the most polarizing issues of the day, and chews them over. And these shows are often very ideological and opinion-oriented. And on two of the three major cable networks, the hosts clearly have an ideology. Mm-hmm. The Fox News Channel, which is now about a dozen years old or so, has had for a while a stable of conservative-leaning or conservative talk show hosts at night. Bill O'Reilly is a classic example. Sean Hannity, who at one point had a liberal partner but no longer does, is another example. Glenn Beck, who is sort of not in prime time but recently became one of the talk hosts on the channel, is another example. What really changed in the 2008 election cycle to some degree was the extent to which MSNBC counter-programmed itself against Fox as a liberal talk channel at night. Mm-hmm. And its lineup at this point consists of Keith Olbermann, who is certainly liberal. The big, sort of hiring and signing in 2008 during the election season was Rachel Maddow, a former Air America. She may still be on Air America, progressive liberal talk host. And then they went out and got the syndicated liberal radio talk host with the biggest audience among liberals, Ed Schultz, and put him on the air. So you clearly now have two of the three cable networks whose hosts, or even anchors, if you want to call them that, are clearly ideological, and they're pitted against each other. And that's been the big change.
Why did they do that, Mark?
Fox obviously has had a working theory from the inception of the channel, which it was evident in, you know, the slogans they would have: "We report, you decide," or "Fair and balanced." And of course, it's a network that's essentially programmed by Roger Ailes, who was a Republican consultant for a long time. He was George H.W. Bush's top advisor in the 1988 presidential campaign. Ailes's point always has been, as appeal has always been, there's a liberal bias to the rest of the media. We are going to be the antidote to that. What MSNBC, interestingly enough, was always kind of the third wheel when it came to cable. CNN was a long-established presence, had a reputation for news gathering. Fox became very popular instantly. And MSNBC, when it came to the ratings, was the perennial third-place finisher. And they struggled for an identity and a programming niche. And I think what they finally decided was, you know, hey, this is how we are going to identify. We are going to have a coherent identity at night, and it's going to be as fundamentally as a liberal talk outlet, liberal debate outlet, to counter-program against Fox. And again, remember, they really implemented the strategy in a highly partisan and highly charged election year. And so that's what you've really got. You've got these two niches being filled, largely, you know, for business reasons.
Right. And when you look at the makeup of the audience, Mark, is it heavily conservative watching Fox, heavily liberal watching MSNBC, or are there crossovers?
There are certainly some crossovers, and I think that's particularly the case with Fox. But there's no doubt that, you know, that now there's sort of a partisan divide on these channels. As a matter of fact, we're at the Pew Research Center here in Washington, D.C., and there's another project called the Pew Research Center for the People and Press that does polling. And they recently released this data assessing sort of partisan views of the cable networks, and it's very interesting. 72% of Republicans view Fox News positively. Only 43% of Democrats do. On the other hand, 75% of Democrats view CNN favorably, only 44% of Republicans do. And it's the same kind of thing at MSNBC. 60% of Democrats view it favorably, only 34% among Republicans. So we do see there's this idea of these niches. They're starting to attract audiences that tilt that way and skew that way. And clearly Republicans favor Fox over the other two. Democrats favor CNN or MSNBC over Fox. So, yes, you're starting to see a partisan divide in both the audiences as well as how the networks are actually perceived by the public.
And what about politicians when they decide what shows they're going to appear on? Is there a great disparity between Republicans deciding to go to Fox, Democrats deciding to go to CNN, MSNBC?
Well, I think in general, it certainly depends. And I believe, for example, Dick Cheney was somebody who, you know, favored, for example, going on the Fox News channel.
Rush Limbaugh's show, too.
At Rush's show. And obviously, any politician, you know, can sense that he or she may get a friendlier or harsher grilling or greeting on one of these networks. But traditionally, politicians have tended to to make themselves available, broadly and generally speaking, to all the cable networks because they want to reach as many ears and eyeballs as possible. Now, there's been something of a little bit of a change of that, I would say, in recent months with the Obama administration sort of clearly and openly beginning to criticize the Fox News channel, not be quite as accessible on the Fox News channel as they've been otherwise. And so I don't have a rundown of generally politicians that say, I'm going on CNN, I'm going on Fox. There's been some of that. I think, frankly, there may be more of that as we move forward. And what's new, obviously, is sort of the Obama administration's, in some ways, open conflict now with Fox News.
Right. And the question is out there, should the president be taking on Fox News? What good does it do for him to do that? Is that a wise move on the administration's part?
Well, you know, that's a job for political strategists. it's hard to know how that will play. I don't really have an intelligent opinion on whether it's good politics or bad politics. It certainly has gotten a lot of attention from the media, and there's been a lot of commentary. Some people, certainly people on the left, are in some ways energized by the fact that Obama, has taken on Fox News. And frankly, on some levels, there's been some effort on the left to convince basically Democrats and liberals to stay off the Fox News channel. There are a lot of other commentators, liberals among them, who say, you know, it doesn't make sense to pick a fight publicly, with a news organization or a news outlet. I'm not sure how it'll ultimately play out. One thing we have to remember, and at some levels it's a tribute to cable, that they inject themselves into the public consciousness to the degree they do. These are not huge audiences we're talking about. You know, everybody, the narrative in the media in recent years has been the broadcast network newscast, the ABC, CBS, and NBC newscast. They're losing, they're hemorrhaging viewers, their viewers are old, you know, it's old media, they're way past their prime, they're news dinosaurs, and all the energy and the power is going to cable. Well, the truth is, if you look at the cable news audiences, and you know, traditionally Bill O'Reilly, for example, has had the biggest primetime audience, it's still only a fraction of what even the, considerably less than what even the number three evening newscast gets at CBS. So it's not like these cable outlets are drawing massive amounts of viewers every night. But mm-hmm. what's interesting is the degree to which they have sort of been able to help drive the political dialogue. And one of the reasons is, frankly, their choice of stories to cover. And again, when we talk about cable in primetime, we're almost always talking about the political hot-button issue of the day, which is getting debated. They don't feel the need to, in most of these shows, or many of these shows, to do a comprehensive, this is what happened in the world today kind of analysis on primetime. They pick the one or two hottest issues, whether it's the health care debate or the war in Afghanistan, and they pound away at issues that tend to divide and polarize the American public.
And then sometimes, and I don't understand this, it drives me crazy, they decide to hammer away at each other and pick on each other ad nauseum. Why do they do that?
Excellent point. You know, and that's one of the sort of the interesting things here. I mean, Kali and Emptor, one of the things that we talk about now is sort of the news of validation, which means that people can, you know, go to, you know, the cable network of their choice and have their views reaffirmed and never go anywhere else and never have to see the other side sort of presented. We've known for a long time that, you know, for a while now, it's been obvious that if you watch CNN, let's say MSNBC and Fox, you're going to get very different opinions of, let's say, President Obama or President Bush or whatever the case might have been. It's also, frankly, true that you're also going to get, frankly, in some ways, a different set of facts, a different set of reality. They cover different stories. They cover the same stories from different angles. So, you know, it's moved past the stage of, you know, we're going to give you different opinions. They're also, frankly, going to give you different news. They're going to tell you different things about the world around them that may contradict each other. And finally, and it's been more aggressive as time has gone on, they're also basically telling you that the other guy is lying to you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's fairly new, you know, in the cable universe and certainly in recent history in the news universe in America. You've literally got media outlets, and part of their message now is that other guy, on the other side of the cable clicker is not telling you the truth. Attacking the other media outlet is part of the conversation now. And frankly, the Pew Research Center for the People and Press just put out a study that got a lot of attention that showed that public attitudes toward press accuracy and bias and accountability are sort of at historic lows. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons may well be that one of the, you know, narratives on cable news now is you've got to watch us because part of the media is corrupt and lying to you. And so, in their own way, they're planting seeds of antipathy and skepticism about the media in general in their programming.
Right. The other thing that maybe this is just me, but it's sort of hard for me to keep watching all of these people, and they seem to take up more and more time with opinion.
Right.
It gets tedious to me after a while. It's the same person giving you the same thing over and over and over, and you either have to really, really respect somebody, or it seems to me as though you grow tired of that person's opinion. Who are you to give me this opinion over and over and over and over?
Yeah, well, there's no argument about that. I mean, if you look at sort of, you know, fundamentally the amount of opinion on cable at night, and, you know, it's fundamentally a parade of talking heads. And even on CNN, and we haven't talked about them a lot, but, you know, CNN's hosts in primetime don't tend to be ideological, or if they are, they certainly don't show it. You know, Campbell Brown isn't clearly liberal or conservative. Anderson Cooper isn't clearly liberal or conservative. But even on those shows, even if the hosts aren't actively debating issues from ideological point of views, many of the panelists are. Now, why has this become the format on cable news? Well, part of it's got to be just business. I mean, let's face it, there's a couple ways you can fill the yawning chasm of news hole that's on cable news, which is 24/7. One way is to actually go out and do stories. Send reporters all over the country, all over the world, pay their hotel bills, pay their travel expenses, do the logistics. That costs money. You know, that kind of journalism is very expensive. Conversely, another way to do it is to bring people into your studio, some, not all, of whom will talk for free, and fill up that same amount of airtime with essentially pretty cheap, and I don't mean that by the nature of, but I'm talking fiscally now, pretty cheap conversation. So one of the reasons we get this kind of programming in the first place is it's just a lot less expensive to produce.
Right.
The other part that you mentioned is, look, we came off a historic election year in 2008. There's plenty of evidence to suggest the American public was paying more attention to this election than any in recent history. They were more energized on both sides, perhaps. There's no doubt about the amount of coverage was phenomenal. Cable ratings boomed. Every night, if you were a partisan on one side or the other, you were probably watching your favorite cable station and just sucking up this drama. Now, frankly, we're in a phase where much of the American public doesn't need that fix on a nightly basis. So really, if you are still somebody who's watching cable news every night and watching the talking heads and watching the opinion from the left and the right, that, you know, you're probably a political junkie who really, needs to get a fix and still needs to get a fix. And that's not a lot of America. So one of the things I think that Fox News has been able to do as sort of the clearly conservative channel at night is, in some ways, they've been effective in becoming the opposition to the president. Therefore, they've done well in the ratings. But in generally speaking, I think a lot of Americans had sort of post-campaign traumatic stress syndrome and aren't in the mood to watch people argue, maybe the same people, every single night on cable TV. And so it becomes a tougher challenge for them to maintain the momentum they had in the election year.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Mark, and we'll take them in just one moment. Mark Jerkowitz is our guest, Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. We're talking, well, we can move it beyond cable news, but we're looking at cable news and how the programs seem to appeal more and more to partisan audiences, to Republican audiences, to Democratic audiences. There's not a lot of crossover. What does that mean for us? Do you find them entertaining? Do you find them tedious? Why in the world do they take on each other? I find that quite irritating. Do you think that CNN, of all of them, is the most fair and balanced? Do you find, as Mark suggested, that you don't need to get your daily fix of cable news right now with the election season being over? How do you consume news? Do you find these programs entertaining, or do you have a problem with them? Let's go to you in a moment. We have one line open, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, it's talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, with the president being in Madison, Wisconsin, we thought that we would talk education. We have a guest who wrote an article, maybe you saw it, in the Sunday op-ed New York Times, Susan Engel. And Susan writes about how to attract wonderful people to the teaching profession and how we should train people to be teachers. She has some very dramatic suggestions. She will be with us the second hour of our program. All right, our lines are all filled as we talk about cable news and how we get our news and appealing to partisan audiences and that growing in our country and what it means for democracy, etc. We start our calls with Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Another fine guest.
Great.
I have to admit that I'm of sufficient vintage, so this is an out-of-date example, but if you were a regular reader of the New Statesman, you would almost certainly, for balance, read The Economist. And since extremes don't always reveal the truth, you look for something in the middle, and the New York Times, when it aspired to be a paper of record, would be a place to go for balanced views, but you might not expect them to tell you what the other two sources did. And this is a view of where you're going to get your information that's necessary for citizenship. So isn't there something deficient in that there's the consumption of these extreme positions to the exclusion of other information? There's a vital question as to where does that mental view come from in broadcast media? So thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Great question.
It is a terrific question. And the answer is yes. I would say that if you are strictly, you know, consuming one or the other, if you're, you know, you're watching MSNBC every night, if you're watching Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow every single night, or you're watching Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity every single night, you're certainly only getting part of the news that day. One of the things that obviously, and you know, we're talking about the biggest change in the media, which is obviously going through a tremendous transformation now, has been a fragmentation in recent years. I mean, I'm old enough to have grown up in a universe where essentially there was a 24-hour news cycle. And basically there were two main places where you got your news. Your morning newspaper landed on your front porch every 24 hours and you read it. And then Walter Cronkite, you know, during the dinner hour,
Walter,
told you what happened that day. And then
right.
He'd come back the next day and tell you what happened. And that was basically it. And funny enough, if you actually wanted breaking news in those days, you'd go to an even older media technology, which is radio.
Yes.
Because they would have, at least they would have a newscast on every hour on the
top
hour.
Top of the hour.
And that was your speedy, you know, that was for the real news junkie. Holy cow, news every hour. Well, now we live in this instantaneous age. And among other things, we don't have journalists who have the credibility of a single player like Walter Cronkite. And we have a lot of niche media. And I often speak to young people and tell them, look, you're, in some ways you're growing up in a fantastic age for media. You have more choices than ever. But in some ways the burden is on the news consumer in a way it didn't used to be, to make intelligent choices. And I hate to say it, it sounds like what your doctor would tell you about your diet. But you need, the advice is you have to have a balanced diet. If you are simply absorbing news and information from one ideological vantage point, then, you know, that's not to say everything you're hearing is wrong. It is to say you're not getting the whole story. Having said that, in the broadcast area, the network newscasts, there's plenty of evidence to show that that Republicans do not trust the evening broadcast news networks programs the way the Democrats do. But generally speaking, they tend to give you that kind of balance. Here's what happened in your world today. Certainly not anywhere near the ideology that you're going to get on cable. The problem has been, and with them, is that they are losing audience. They are mass media that's sort of eroding. They're on at an hour in the day when, frankly, many people are now working, and the average age of the broadcast network is news consumer is last time I looked 61 years old.
Really?
Yes, which is not which is an aging demographic and not an advertiser friendly demographic. So yeah, the answer to the question is, you know, if you were a John McCain supporter and in the final days of the 2008 campaign you were logging onto the Drudge Report and watching Sean Hannity every night, and you were an Obama supporter and you're logging onto the Huffington Post online and then watching Keith Olbermann every night, I'm not sure you two could agree that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and that's a problem.
Maybe we should force ourselves, if we fall into one camp or the other, to become a member of the other camp completely for at least a week and
right.
See if it changes.
Right, shoot behind enemy lines.
Wouldn't
I'd
that
say.
Be interesting? Yeah. And in terms of the news, is this just because I'm of a certain generation, I'm getting old? I find that, I think that the best complete newscasts are the NPR newscasts on the hour and half hour when we can get them on the half hour, and I am addicted to those. If it's close to the news, I'll stop what I'm doing. If I'm in the middle of brushing my teeth with the electric toothbrush, I'll turn it off so I can hear the news. It is a huge part of my day.
Well, and NPR has been a success story. You know, in an era when much of the media has lost audience, they have done very well. And I think they've done very well with a good presentation of news. Also, frankly, with a lot of international news.
Yes.
To a degree, at a time when other media outlets, frankly, have been retreating in that area. And the other thing I should say, before we paint a skewed picture, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that most Americans want news that's accurate, and most of new Americans want news that's objective. They are looking to be told the truth. Certainly there's an appeal to following news that in this age it's so readily accessible, that's going to tell you that everything you think is right, that your heroes are really heroes and your villains are really villains. And there's certainly a certain basic psychological appeal to that. But I don't think there's been a massive transformation of the sort of American news consumer mentality that says, I don't really want to know what's going on in the world. I only want to know the things that are making me comfortable.
Right. Paul from La Crosse, hi.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I think that it's important to note that the cable news are definitely market-driven. On MSNBC, Tucker Carlson lost his show. Dan Abrams was on with Rachel Maddow's spot. He didn't work out. And in the morning, they have Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and his frequent guest, which is Pat Buchanan. So at least, you know, MSNBC, at least for part of the day, tries to tell it. But when you talk about Fox News, you're not talking about, you know, when people think about Fox News, they're not thinking about the news side of the business. They're thinking about all the commentators.
Mm-hmm.
When Fox News wrote its defense, they excluded, as part of their entertainment, part was the Fox and Friends in the morning. That's not news. Glenn Beck, not news. Another little news segment, and then we go to Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, not news. And so the faces of Fox News are the commentators, just as for MSNBC, it's Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow. And people have got to understand that there's a difference between news and opinion, but we've blurred that line so much that the common consumer, the people who don't watch a lot of news, the non-political junkies, don't seem to get that and seem to lump everybody into the same wagon.
Mark.
You know, that's right. I mean, these cable channels have branded themselves with their top flight, prime time ideological hosts. That's what you associate with these networks. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And, you know, in some cases, and you mentioned this earlier, part of this is personality driven. And so the Olbermann-O'Reilly fight, for example, then becomes all part and parcel of this. There's absolutely no doubt that these cable channels, whatever they do during the daytime, are associated with these highly ideological personalities. And it's, you know, look, I was a newspaper ombudsman, and, you know, it was hard enough to get people to understand in many cases that there was legitimately a difference at the Boston Globe where I worked between what was no doubt a liberal editorial and op-ed page and the rest of the news coverage, which was fair and balanced. People would say, oh, the Globe's a liberal newspaper. Why? Because on a given day when they might get a 60 or 80-page paper, two of those pages would contain liberal opinion. So, you know, to expect people to, in their own mind, say, you know, well, there's this segment of Fox and this segment of MSNBC, so, you know, and separate it from what is the overwhelmingly ideological chatter in the evening is a pretty difficult thing to expect. The Fox has always maintained, and this has always been their argument, that, sure, we have conservative commentators on at night, but, you know, the news product during the daytime is fair and balanced. And I can't speak definitively to that. We have not, in our content analysis, which we do a lot here at the Project for Excellence Journalism, we haven't done anything definitive on that at this point. But in this latest round of the conflict with the Obama administration, when they've, you know, continued to say, hey, you know, you've got to separate out our opinion from our news, it has invited more scrutiny of their news operation. And there have been several media writers who are starting to look into their news operation and see whether or not that claim holds up at this point.
Thank you,
Paul. There's no doubt that the Olbermanns and the O'Reillys define those two channels.
Thanks, Paul. Scott from Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. Just a couple of points. You know, and a lot of this has to start with what people conceived of the mainstream media. I mean, when you had Peter Jennings saying that America had a temper tantrum on the 5 o'clock news when Republicans won, I mean, that was opinion journalism when it shouldn't have been, you know, saying that America had a temper tantrum. You've got Newsweek, you've got Jonathan Alter, you know, John Meacham, Howard Feynman, all the senior editors for Newsweek, which is supposed to be a mainstream news magazine. They're on Keith Olbermann every day. It's just amazing. There's got to be a differentiation. And I guess I'm defending Fox, and I really don't want to be, but I'm just trying to be honest. The difference between the two is on Fox, you've got Mara Liasson, Juan Williams, Pat Caddell, Kirsten Powers, Susan Estridge, a variety of different, Lanny Davis, and a variety of different Democrats on their all the time. Lanny Davis said, I'll buy every Republican that's on Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann's show a steak dinner, and I'll never have to spend any money. There's a difference between the two, but one of them really seems to get the hit all the time, and that's Fox News. And there is a difference between the two. You have opinion journalism, it's called, or opinion, when you've got another station at least tries to be, I don't want to say fair and balanced, but you get to see an alternative view. I mean, I like it because I get to hear Lanny Davis. I get to hear Susan Estridge and Kirsten Powers. These guys are all very intelligent, and they give me both sides to an issue. But it seems like Fox just gets bashed when you've got MSNBC, who, for the most part, we've got to admit, they really take a pass.
Mark.
Well, I mean, you know, it depends who's doing the bashing, obviously. I mean, it's certainly, if you're going to talk about ideological networks, there's no way that you can simply say, hey, Fox is outside the box and MSNBC is not. Clearly, you know, MSNBC is as liberal, if not more so in primetime, than Fox is conservative. There's no doubt about it. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, the Democrats who go on Fox, and actually I read a story this week about, you know, sort of the question of why do some Democrats consultants go on Fox, and how difficult is it? And the truth is, you're right. Susan Estridge is on there. There are some Democrats who show up. Sometimes they are cannon fodder for a discussion that obviously goes the other way. But Fox certainly does have some Democratic contributors. What I think, however, drives both of these shows, and why I think that's less significant, it's the voice of the hosts that drive and define these programs. And look, Bill O'Reilly is not a doctrinaire conservative. There are issues on which he is not a doctrinaire conservative. He is sometimes a real contrarian in those terms. You can't fill in the blanks with him easily all the time. But by and large, you know, these shows are really driven by the views of the host.
What about his point, the partnerships with news magazines and with newspapers?
Well, you know, we're in a talking head universe in which, MSNBC and Newsweek, I believe, are sort of do have sort of an online partnership. Almost every journalist goes on these talking head shows once in a while. I think the point that he was trying to make, and there's some truth to it, is certainly, Jonathan Alter is a liberal commentator. There's no doubt about it. I'm not so sure about John Meacham. Howard Feynman is, you know, kind of basically his political strategy guy. But if you're asking, is most of the mainstream media, if you were to look at, there are plenty of studies that have shown, you know, if you were to look at who mainstream media journalists, do they tend to be more liberal than conservative, or certainly more liberal in the country overall? They do in their own personal views. That, of course, that gets into the eternal question of, does that end up showing up in their work? And, you know, you can make a good argument. Certainly people can find examples of it when you look hard enough. But you can make a good argument that there are plenty of liberals who are, and conservatives too, who are capable of covering things fairly. What's new with the cable channels, or relatively new, is that there isn't any attempt to create that kind of a balance.
Yeah. My other question is, why in the world do they use all of these cable channels, the same people all the time? This is a big country. There are a lot of people who are smart, who are commentators, who teach, who... It's one of the things we pride ourselves on here is to be able to have a wide variety of guests. And let me tell you, they're plentiful. These places use the same people all the time. Why?
Well, some of them are actually contributors, obviously, and they have, you know, obviously they have contracts and they're paying these folks, so they're gonna get their money's worth. The other, you know, question may well be, look, if you were to really open the conversation up to a wide variety of voices, perhaps it would get more unpredictable than either of these, than these networks want. You know, at the end of the day, there's certainly a message, and they want to reaffirm that message, and they know what their, you know, commentators are going to say. You know, they're not really looking, I would say, any of these shows to sort of say, hey, let's toss this up in the air and see what's really going on. There's a point of view that's going to be maintained. The other thing I would say is, and I once learned that, you know, one of the earliest ones of these kinds of sort of debate shows was the McLaughlin Group, which is still on. It's kind of the granddaddy of it. And I don't know if you watched it at the time, but I remember watching it at the time. And, you know, at the time it was kind of shocking. Wow,
yes.
You know, ideological people on TV shouting at each other every week. That's pretty unusual for news. And now it's kind of, you know, the way of the world. And the same people would be on week in and week out, the same cast of characters. At one point, it was Bob Novak, Jack German, Buchanan, Eleanor Clift. And one of the things that was explained to me about television is that, you know, it's unlike movies. When people go to movies, they want the people they see on the screen there, they want to be inaccessible movie stars, larger than life. What works in television is, on some level, a kind of psychological connection. A sense of familiarity between the person who's on television and the viewer. And often in these kinds of shows, by bringing the same people on who are sort of predictable and they might argue with each other, might take different sides, there's this kind of sort of almost like a family kind of sitcom. Everybody knows, the viewers know what the role of each of these folks are.
Right.
They may not like them, or they may hate them, or they may love them, but there is sort of, I know what this guy's about, and they sort of, they create very well-worn personalities that actually help in some ways to create this, you know, sort of psychological connection between the viewer and the talent that seems to be part of what makes television a success.
Mm-hmm. Scott, thanks for the call. Kurt from Kenosha, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess the discussion here, the vaucous nature of cable news reinforces my decision not to purchase the cable product. So I guess maybe I'm not an expert on it, but in this day and age, you really can't escape noticing it. And I just like to say I'm glad to see President Obama take a stand against this Fox News, because I think the country really needs to see some pushback on this. I acknowledge Scott from Green Bay's point that there is some sort of bias in terms of liberal conservative in the historical media. But there is that bias exists in life, and it's not entirely, just a liberal chatterbox in the mainstream media. It never has been. There's always been business news programs, et cetera, which are always conservative, but that never gets mentioned. It's created an urban myth that, the mainstream media is just uniformly liberal. But the difference between the mainstream media has existed historically, and Fox News is Fox News was created to be a political organ. I mean, for God's sake, you got Robert Ailes bringing this thing up from the ground level up, and they started it to be a political organ of the Republican Party. It's not conservative, it's Republican. Okay? And that's the important distinction. And even that would be okay in my book if they were honest about what they were. But no, they try to pretend that they're, quote, fair and balanced. And perhaps even I could stomach that. But where they break me down is they are making mainstream acceptable to lie, insult, and vilify people simply for having a different political opinion. You know, I've seen clips, and I have neighbors with cable, I've seen it for myself where Fox hosts are, calling me a traitor and because I have a political view on a certain one political issue, and traitor is one step from treason, from being hung,
Mark, what do you say?
Well, traitor is actually the same thing as treason, I think. that's an interesting take. The first thing we should say about, by the way, Obama v. Fox News, we don't know how it will play out. One of the interesting, this is kind of an evolving relationship. There was a report in September that David Axelrod, who's one of Obama's top advisors, actually had sat down with Roger Ailes, and the assumption was that they were looking for some kind of a truce. Obama himself had a conversation with Roger Ailes. But this is not the first time that presidents and people in power have picked fights with the media, and you can certainly argue that the Bush administration's attitude toward the New York Times was one of almost open hostility at many times. So, this isn't brand new. What you're hearing from folks in the last several calls is part of the sort of the culture that's been set up by this. Fox is worse than MSNBC. No, MSNBC is worse than Fox. In some ways, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. The quality of the programming does matter. The quality of the rhetoric does matter. But, what we're really talking about, and I think what the last two callers, what you get from them, are that now we have, at least two of the cable networks that really, are designed to convince you that the other guy is wrong, and maybe evil. I mean, you know, Keith Olbermann gives out the Worst Person in the World award every night on his program. And yes, the rhetoric is harsh. It is unforgiving in many cases. And, you know, I'm not a chicken and the egg guy. I don't, you know, everybody talks about the coarsening and the polarization of our political culture, and it's worse than it's been in a long time. I don't know whether cable feeds off it or contributes to it. But it does breed a kind of intolerance for other views or dismissal of other views, which can be dangerous. And mm-hmm. why, you know, it's caveat emptor if you are getting your worldview from simply one of these places.
Mark Jerkowitz is our guest this hour, Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. We're talking about cable news networks, and if we watch those stations that reinforce what we already think. We're talking a bit about the president taking on Fox News, the evolution of the partisan nature of cable news, the relatively small audience that cable news has, and welcoming your calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be talking about teachers. Our guest says that our best universities have paradoxically typically looked down their noses at education as if it were intellectually inferior. The result is that the strongest students are often in colleges that have no interest in education, while the most students who want to teach. We'll be looking at how we teach teachers the second hour of the program today. All right, back to phone calls. Rich from Sullivan. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Kathleen. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
If I'm understanding the theme of the program correctly, it's a discussion of how certain news outlets have become partisan. And my concern, I want your guest's response to this, is not that there are partisan voices or that the news is colored one way or another, but there are too few. That in the United States of America, unlike some other nations I've visited, we allow media to concentrate in the hands of a few very, very powerful corporations. And Wisconsin Public Radio is talking heads. Kathleen and I just came back from a trip with a bunch of other listeners to Springfield, Illinois, and I joked with her that when I call, she may want to have duct tape ready because she could say, well, that's one talking head that talks too much.
No, you don't.
But my point is, don't we need more and more varied voices? And the cure to that is to somehow politically come around to the viewpoint that media has become too concentrated in the hands of a few, and that we need either better financing of places like Wisconsin Public Radio or community radio stations. I just want your guest's response to that.
You know, that's a fascinating point, and I would say that have said a couple of years ago for a lot of people who were concerned about the media culture in this country, that was issue number one. Corporate ownership, conglomerate ownership, you know, many of us who have worked in this industry, you know, always saw the charts where about 9 corporations owned, you know, across all sorts of platforms, you know, Disney Company, AOL, Time Warner, Rupert Murdoch's operation, how much of the media were concentrated in the hands of a few powerful figures. And it was a legitimate concern from an economic standpoint. It was a legitimate concern about the variety of voices. Frankly, that's changed, and it hasn't changed necessarily because people wanted it to change. It's changed because of economics and technology. For one thing, the big news organizations are breaking down. They are selling off. Knight Ritter, which was once the second biggest newspaper chain in the country, doesn't even exist anymore. The New York Times Company is trying to sell, or was trying to sell, its New England papers. The Tribune Company, which, you know, is in dire straits. So there's been actually a breaking down of these big corporate ownership models in recent years, primarily for economic reasons. The other thing that's obviously happened is because of the technology and the ability of people to the internet and cable, we do now have a variety of voices. We do now have much more citizen journalism than we had before. We do now have bloggers from all kinds of perspectives developing significant audiences. So my take on that would be that if we had had this conversation 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, you know, that's a very significant issue. I think for some big macro factors, primarily economics, that's no longer the biggest concern about the state of journalism. I mean, the real biggest concern about the state of American journalism today is no longer corporate conglomerate ownership. It's frankly, in this economic environment where we've seen so many layoffs, so much downsizing, there's a real concern about who is going to be able to subsidize the quality journalism that's expensive. And there is a very active debate about what's the best way to do this, and should there be more government intervention and more public sector involvement in the media in saving the news. And that's a conversation, but I would say that's eclipsed concerns about corporate conglomerate ownership that might have dominated the conversation 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and we miss some of those stories. If I've said this once, I've said it 20 times on the air, but you miss people who really did great documentary work, and there weren't many of those shows, but they were so influential back in the 50s and in the 60s, looking at hunger, looking at some of
the old NBC white papers.
Well, let's get some of those on healthcare or on Afghanistan or Iraq. Those are so important right now, instead of hearing people yak about it all the time.
I certainly agree. We're past the heyday of that kind of journalism on television, and it gets harder to sustain in the newspaper world. Again, to go back to my previous point.
Right.
That kind of quality journalism, expensive journalism. We talked about how journalism can be, information can be cheap on cable because you can get talking heads. A lot of journalism is very expensive. It involves sending people overseas. It involves having people go around the United States of America. It involves investigative units that can take 4 months to churn out one story. It involves sophisticated beat reporters. It involves time and effort and energy. And that kind of journalism was primarily done by what had been the two big mass media powers in this country, daily newspapers and broadcast television journalism. Well, in many respects, those have been the two media platforms that have been hit hardest by the changing demographics of news, by the changing economy of news. I worked at the Boston Globe. The first thing, which has now been through round after round to buy out, it almost got the New York Times Company almost sold it for reportedly about 10% of what they paid for it 16 years ago. The first thing they did when times got tough was they cut their foreign bureaus. Mm. So, you know, that's a very the diminution of that kind of coverage is very much a function of the economics of the situation right now.
Yeah.
Look, even you see in the entertainment world, I mean, the big thing that people talk about on NBC is Jay Leno, you know,
right,
having a primetime program, 10 o'clock at night. What's one of the primary reasons? Well, they didn't want to lose him, obviously, to another network, but it's cheap. That's a lot cheaper than producing, and this isn't news, obviously, it's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But doing a Leno show 5 nights a week is a heck of a lot cheaper than hiring stars and script writers and producers and directors. And the economy, the impact of the economy on that kind of journalism is almost incalculable.
Right. Thanks, Rich, for your call. Zach from Green Bay, hi.
Thank you. I think CNN, ABC, CBS, the mainstream news networks, have gotten off far too easy in this discussion. I think by the framework of the news that they present and don't present, they are very, very pro-corporate in their perspective. For years, they ignored the ongoing health care delivery crisis in this country. They ignore workers' rights, those issues. I don't think it's any accident that that wealth has become extremely more concentrated in the past 35 years and ignored by the media. They ignore environmental issues. You know, the global warming is not the only environmental crisis that is ongoing in this world. We have a worldwide water crisis and a worldwide ocean crisis. And at the same time, they overcover violent crime
which is, if you look at the statistics, has gone steadily down in the past 25 years.
All right, let's get a response. We're running short on time. Mark?
Well, the one thing I'd say about that is obviously you can always take the news media to task for having a somewhat narrow focus, and they do, and a relatively narrow focus. And one of the things you do find is that traditionally, even on the mainstream objective, relatively objective outlets, that the voices of average citizens, of workers, are often eclipsed by the voices of people in power, business people, politicians, that sort of thing. There's absolutely no doubt about it. We just did a study on economic coverage of the economic recession by the media here since Obama became president, and we found it was very much a Washington story, a New York story. But despite the widespread impact of the economic crisis throughout all sectors of America, that the voice, you know, that the American citizen, the average worker, the average Joe, really didn't have nearly as big a role in this kind of coverage as the institutional powers. Having said, the only thing I'll say about crime is obviously there's a whole different issue about why crime gets covered and why certain crimes get covered over and over. I think that's a bigger issue, frankly, for local television.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Than it is for national television, except for those few cable shows that focus almost exclusively on crime every night.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for the hour. It was
You're
great.
You're welcome.
Mark Jerkowitz, Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, and thanks to Rob as well for on-air production. Rob is going to the University of Chicago for a new job starting next week, so wish him well as he answers phones today. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We'll return following the news.